Can I just get you please both to recite all of the Infinity Stones?
Mind Stone. Soul Stone. Time Stone.
Why is she doing it in that voice?
Mind Stone. It's like bloody Doctor Strange.
Mind Stone, Space Stone, Earth Stone.
Earth Stone? There's no Earth Stone.
Okay. Are you good?
I'm good.
Good?
Yep.
Do you want to do the theme tune?
Hello!
We'll do it properly. Okay. Hello, and welcome to today's show. What's got one eye, short hair, and a big set of family jewels? Get your mind out of the gutter, Martin. We've been watching 2017's Thor Ragnarok. Yes, we've finally made it to the good bits of Phase 3. Hela's been keeping it low-key for centuries, but brother Loki has been having a hell of a time in Asgard. Odin's been holding out on Earth waiting for someone to come join him on his rock. And while Thor and Hulk bicker over who's the strongest Avenger, isn't the real debate who's got the biggest swinging hammer? Timed all this and more on today's A Marvelous Lunch Break. Joining me today, as always, is Miss Marvel herself, Anna Harrison.
Hello.
And, of course, Agent Martin Carter.
Hiya.
How are you both doing?
Yeah,
very
good.
Good, thank you.
Very good.
Very high spirits.
Then hello as well to all our new listeners this week from around the world. If this is the first time you're tuning in, or if you're back for more, do note there are spoilers in this podcast. And if you're listening to us, please remember to review it, subscribe it. It means a lot to us. So you can get more of this in your ears as well over the coming weeks. We've got a few episodes left on our groundbreaking first season of the Marvel's Lunch Break. Second yet to be confirmed. So if you're feeling generous, why not just give us a little share on your most popular social media channel? And you never know, the last little run-in, you can make all the difference.
Can I give my shout-outs to our two people who gave us some good feedback today?
Yeah, absolutely.
So hello to Cadence and Danielle, all the way from California, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Good feedback.
Thank you for good feedback. What I mean was pleasantry shared on Twitter about how much they enjoyed us, particularly Anna's 20-second and two-minute roundups. So their expectations are high.
I know.
We love the engagement.
We do.
Keep
engaging.
It.
Let us know your thoughts about Infinity War, because we've got two podcasts left until we'll be doing our Infinity War or whole Act 1 wrap-up, really. So please get those in on social media. Before we kick off with the cast, Anna, it's time.
Okay.
Are you prepped?
I'm ready.
Nika.
Thanks, Martin.
50-second version is up first, right?
50-second.
Did I say 50? I meant 15.
It's 20.
We're trying to
get it down to 15, but I'm... Okay. Could say the last two episodes. Okay, I did all right on the 22nd, but the 2 minute were epic fails in the last two. So I feel like there's a lot of pressure on these. But I'm feeling good, feeling strong.
Okay. I believe in you.
So it's I've got it.
20 seconds.
20 seconds first. Okay.
Thor Ragnarok in 20 seconds. 3, 2, 1. Go.
After Odin's death unleashes their psycho sister from her hell prison, Thor and Loki must fight their way off a trash planet presided over by the Looney Tunes Grandmaster. With help from the Hulk, kick-ass Valkyrie, and a reluctant Loki, Thor must sacrifice his home to save their people and take down Hela.
Stop.
That's got to be under 10.
I felt fast.
Sweepstake, what are you guessing?
13.
11.
Ooh, Anna wins again.
Yeah.
12 seconds and 20 milliseconds.
Nice.
If you were rounding down,
then it'd be 12.
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it? Yeah. Maths.
Have you got a longer version for us?
Okay.
She's always got a longer version.
Here we go.
Okay.
This is it. This is my redemption.
2 minutes going on the clock.
Can we just highlight that Arnold is now doing vocal warm-ups before we start podcasting to prepare for this? Like, this is a level we're at.
I mean, I've only got two episodes left to really like seal my prowess at this. So here we go.
There's a whole red lorry, yellow lorry thing that could be done there with the Mind Stones, isn't there? Mind Stone, Time Stone, Soul Stone, Space Stone.
You missed one. You missed two.
I missed three? Two?
I don't have time for this. Okay.
Three, two,
one.
Wait, you're never ready. I don't have time for this. Wait, I'm not ready. Three, two, one.
Ooh, I mean, oh no, Thor in chains. What? He's getting...
I didn't say go! I said 3, 2, 1, and I was doing a dramatic pause.
I thought of time for dramatic pauses. I'm too tight. Okay.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, go.
Oh, I mean, oh no, Thor in chains. He's getting some exposition about Ragnarok, kicking off some flaming lightning battles and fighting massive dragons. Cue the immigrant song. Thor victorious. It's back to Asgard, where a delightful theatrical production is taking place. But hold the phone, it's Loki masquerading as Odin. Thor is pissed, and the boys are off to retrieve their dad. Quick hilarious interlude with Doctor Strange, and the princes arrive in Norway in time for Odin's heartfelt and sparkly death after he warns them of their psycho sister he locked away in hell, who at that moment pops right up. She's not messing around. She crushes Mew Mew to rubble, chases the boys up the Rainbow Road, and kicks them into space. Now at Asgard, Hela unceremoniously kills the Warriors 3, raises an army of the dead, plans universal domination, and plugs some plot holes. Meanwhile, a hammerless Thor is spit out on a trash planet, and a drunk, super hot junkyard lady shows up to electrocute him and claim him as her bounty. One creepy Willy Wonka ride later, and Thor is face to face with a crazy pants grandmaster who imprisons him in a freaky circle, and we meet power couple Korg and Beak. Thor's got no time for Loki shenanigans, and he's off to fight the master's champion, but he'll get no help from junkyard lady, even though it turns out she's a super-powered Asgardian Valkyrie with a massive grudge against Hela. Quick haircut and costume change, it's time for an epic battle with, holy crap, it's the Hulk! The sun's not going down, and Thor and Hulk are seriously raging against each other until Thor's obedience chip tips the battle in Hulk's favor. Now it's time for some Thor abs, Hulk in a hot tub, interspace communication with rebel leader Heimdall. After some tantrums and whining, we finally got Banner back, but they need a new plane to get off this trash heap. Good thing Valkyrie's finally on their side and dragged Loki along with her. The Revengers' escape plan is a go, and the prisoners with jobs are starting a revolution. Brother bonding time, guns, heartfelt chat, get help! Attempt to double cross, and Thor steals the Grandmaster's sex ship, leaving Loki behind electrocuted. Sky battle through the devil's anus, and back to Asgard where the revolution is falling behind. Time for the final battle. Thor v. Hela, Bruce v. Mrs. Wolf. It's off to a bad start when Banner goes splat and Thor loses an eye. But Loki arrives to save the day, Valkyrie kicks some ass, and Thor finds his lightning. Cue the immigrant song again! Loki and Thor send Asgard to a fiery end to save its people and end Hela's power. They're off to find a new home. Loki's actually on board and everything's gonna be a-okay. Oh wait, whose ship is that?
Oh, I don't know if I've breathed through the majority of that.
I feel
insane.
Very dizzy. I feel dizzy.
Ooh.
That was good. Oh, yeah. Really, I would also like to praise the copywriting in
thank
that.
You. Thank
1 minute
you.
43 before yes! we do the copywriting praise. Get help.
Heck yeah.
That was great little reference. Yeah.
The last line at the end. Was a teaser.
Thank you.
Teaser for things to come.
Teaser for
I think that was your best written yet.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was incredible.
Thank you.
Lots of little references in there. And you know what, right? We finally found a use for the times 2 or times 0.5 feature on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
You can slow this down.
I think people need to slow that down.
Yeah.
Slow it down. Give it a good listen. Great.
Thanks. Thanks, well guys. Done. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
All right.
We're ready to kick off.
Yeah.
As always... with the cast. Cheers and boos. We've only got a few podcasts left to do this, so I want everything you've got.
All right.
Okay. Thor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Played by Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, yeah.
Heck yeah.
Better with short hair, I think.
Agreed.
Ooh. Loki.
Yes.
Yeah.
Played by Tom Hiddleston.
Heck yeah. Loki.
Hela. Cate Blanchett.
Mm.
Ooh. No, yes, I'm here for her.
Mm. Is that all?
I am a villain because I've got an English accent.
And a sexy standing pose.
Odin, played by Anthony Hopkins.
Yes, his best Odin yet.
Yeah, he is good fun.
Asgard, played by Asgard.
I like how like Asgard's not a character, but you know, like in the word Marvel, right at the start of Marvel films. Marvel, like, Asgard gets its own letter.
Oh,
it's, like,
yeah.
projected onto the side of a letter. I was like, that's how much resonance it has in our hearts.
It's true.
Heimdall, Idris Elba.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm not too keen on, like, dressed down Heimdall.
Yeah,
I like him when he's suited and booted.
Bedtime.
Yeah, like, yeah. Heimdall in a poncho doesn't tick any boxes for me.
There's a lot of bedtime characters in this. Cause
there's a lot
Odin's,
of Game of Thrones, yeah.
Odin's doing his little...
elasticated waist.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's tucked ready.
In Horlicks.
He's ready to slack out, isn't he? He's like, come on, boys.
I mean, he's
stop
literally
me.
Ready to die. anyone in like a wide khaki is probably ready to say goodbye.
Okay, well, I'll change my outfit for tomorrow then. Valkyrie, played by Tessa Thompson.
Yes.
Great.
The Grandmaster.
Oh, yes.
Played by Jeff Goldblum.
Nah.
Jeff Goldbluming all over the shop in this one. He's great.
By 35, you should have 10 pictures of Jeff Goldblum in your house somewhere. Just saying.
Wow.
I don't know what that means.
Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Played by Benny Cumberbatch.
I enjoyed this cameo, and it really...
You didn't need Doctor Strange to film. This could have done it. That could have been it.
This would have been such a good introduction to that character. I would have been like, tell me more about that guy. Yeah. I want him to have his own movie now.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I don't disagree, right? I don't disagree. You can go back two episodes, three episodes, and listen to Doctor Strange, and you can hear my thoughts there.
Did you know that's our most listened to episode?
Really?
Doctor Strange, yeah.
Wow.
Great, considering that really weird pause we have.
Well, we're all quite drunk and just hate the whole thing.
So is that why we're drinking again tonight?
No.
Was this the whole plan?
I think this was... To what? Because we hated the movie?
No, because
because it makes us better.
Maybe.
Carl Urban played Scourge.
Yeah.
I just think
he made me laugh.
Villain equals English is just a bad formula.
Fair. And Taika Waititi as the director and Korg.
Oh, we are not worthy. He's so amazing. So amazing.
Wow.
Oh no.
I just have
excited.
I have a lot of thoughts about Waititi-isms.
Okay. Into it.
All right then. That's good for you. I've not really got anyone else listed on the cast here. It seems, compared to some Marvel movies, a pretty short cast.
The better for it.
What about the Hulk?
Oh my God,
you didn't mention that Mark Ruffalo whatsoever.
Like Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk.
Yeah.
Yay.
Oh, apologies, Mark.
Also, Mark Ruffalo as Bruce Banner.
Yeah.
Yay. Cool. Good spot before we go any further with that one.
It's a good job of Mayor, isn't it?
But it's still a pretty short cast, but there's a lot of crossover with other movies. Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange. Mark Ruffalo, as you've mentioned, is in here as well. And, you know, crossover from previous Thor movies as well. There's lots of recurring characters. Do you think that's kind of different for these Marvel movies? And do you think it's any better for not really having too many additional characters?
I definitely think so. I really appreciated sort of a tighter cast. We knew the people that we were focusing on. It was about their journey. And, yeah, I was really pleased to have sort of a stripped-down cast of characters that I could just focus on for once.
But I think also they gave so much space to the trash planet, like that almost felt like its own character as well. Like there was so much color in there. It was so different to any other planet we've seen as well. That felt like we didn't have loads of extra cast, but we did have a whole new environment to learn about and to be interested in.
Yeah,
you know, it was the most fully rounded other planet we've had for quite a long time.
Just what I was about to say.
Sorry,
it's brought me onto my point perfectly.
Yes.
Is that we were discussing in the last podcast about the planet Ego in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and how it was a new planet, yes, check, but it didn't really feel like there was anything interesting to explore there.
Yeah.
Where this was a new planet and it was so interesting. You just wanted more of this planet, if anything. And it shows you the difference in just a well-developed kind of setting for the movie.
And even you understood things like the political system or the kind of system of governance. I mean, essentially there isn't one, but how Jeff Goldblum has made a kind of a dictatorship for himself. But then at the end, that all crumbles as well. You didn't have to see his kind of empire fall, but you still did. And then when they're building that big thing of the Hulk on the side of that skyscraper.
And the kind and the sort of like class dynamics as well. You got a real sense of like, you know, the us and them type of society that had going on. And I think also the whole gladiatorial battles that he have is such like a classic trope you see with dictators being like, oh, I'm oppressing all these people, but look at the, you know, you get to watch people kill each other for fun and aren't I great? And
oh,
you know,
definitely.
Let's celebrate.
The whole thing was very Hunger Games, wasn't it?
It was,
like dystopian, fancily dressed upper class.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still think it felt like a Marvel Universe planet, though? Do you think it felt so different from the other space planets that we've seen that it didn't make sense? Or do you think you could say, oh yeah, you could go from Xandar to Trash Planet and, you know, that would be the same place?
I think so. Yeah, I think there was enough about it that felt like there were, I imagine in the background there were probably tons of little homages to things that have been in Marvel, like different planets, different like cultural motifs that we've seen previously. But I definitely got a sense that it sort of fit in the wider universe, which I really liked.
The only thing I would say is perhaps the trash planet in this, if you compare it, which I think the closest equivalent is Nowhere.
Mm.
Nowhere feels quite... It feels very similar in that that's where kind of the outlaws and that sort of thing go, but Nowhere felt quite dangerous, whereas this planet felt quite fun.
Mm.
And there wasn't a huge amount of... I don't know if this is where the universe's rubbish goes, and this is where everyone who's outcast, you know, they're so outcast that they're not on nowhere, they're here. Like, this seems like the bottom of the rung. I'd expected a bit more danger. I don't know, the level of kind of violence in this I thought was a bit PG-13. I don't know.
He melted a guy with a melty stick.
That was pretty violent.
In the, like, campus, I mean, he was wearing slippers while he did it. I mean, it's like...
But, like, it was almost danger was an everyday constant factor in this place. People were dying left,
yeah,
right,
like,
and
it was in
they
nowhere.
They have a blood
sport. But in nowhere, you know, you went into kind of a casino and a bar, and it was quite seedy.
It felt like claustrophobic in nowhere as
and dark.
Well. Yeah, very dark. Like, the danger was almost kind of pressing in around you, whereas I think in nowhere, whereas on, what's it called? Scar. What was the actual planet called?
Trash Planet.
Trash Planet.
None of us have written it down.
Sakaar, that's it. It sort of felt like, I think the really interesting thing about that is, like, yeah, almost all the violence, there wasn't a lot of jeopardy there. A lot of the violence was played to comedic effect, even the melty guy. But there was something about it that I found really intriguing, that's like the only thing that we really got to see and interact with was the kind of upper echelons, except when you're quickly dipping into the sort of seedier areas. And I felt it's one of those places that if you, like, kind of scratched below the surface, or you were hanging out with the people that were having to scavenge for a living, it would be sort of like a horrific area to, like, be a part of. And I like that. I like that, you know, we felt that was there, but it wasn't a huge part of the story.
Totally as well. I think if they'd have gone dark, we'd be sat here, you know, if the whole, if it was nighttime and it was like dark skies and they were indoors, we'd be like, it's just a stereotypical dangerous planet. And when this actually was something quite fresh and interesting to see a planet, you know, usually bright planets are like Xandar, where it's like everything's perfect, this beautiful utopia
that's now in danger from this other horrible dark thing that's coming, and we will save it, you know.
I thought the balance of using a really light, vibrant planet but having horrific blood sports take place was
I suppose Asgard felt dark this time as well, because it had been taken over by Hela. So to have two things that was dark, maybe the...
It's not Thor the Dark World, Martin.
this...
Okay, so I know that I hated Thor the Dark World pretty much, but I do have a little bit of a problem with this film in that... And I'm open to be swayed on this, but I felt a little bit of, and this is probably because I've watched quite a lot of interviews with the director, and I don't think he even watched The Dark World. I think I remember him saying he didn't watch it, or he didn't pay much attention to it. He wasn't concerned about there being continuity, and that was someone else's job. But I did feel slightly a little bit of disrespect towards the MCU. Like, I felt he kind of, it was like, I'm going to do a fun film. It's going to have an 80s vibe. It's going to be, you know, every colour on the spectrum. It's going to be out there. It's going to be humour. Yeah, it's going to be full of humour, which is bold and which is probably what we need in the MCU at this point. But I just felt there was the presence of, how do you pronounce his name? Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
I felt his presence too much in the film. Like, the Russo brothers, like, I know their style, I really like that. But in this, it was like, I'm going to make a Marvel film, but it's going to be my film, and this is going to be, I'm going to get all the praise for this, and I've got such a big ego, I'm going to be a character in the film as well. And, like, you know, the deaths of the Warrior 3, like, just every bit of heritage that had been built up, I felt was kind of brushed under the carpet or disregarded. And whilst I enjoyed the film for what it was, and I really liked it on the rewatch, I just felt there's a bit of shame in there that, I don't know, like, even the fake characters doing the play of what happened in previous films, like, I felt that was a little bit, like, it was taking the piss out of its other films in the MCU.
I see what you're getting at.
Yeah, I see where you're getting at. I see where you're getting at too, definitely. I think, I do understand that sort of idea of kind of legacy, and perhaps there were more beats that could have paid a bit more tribute to sort of to what has been built, like the world building that had gone on previously. But I think for me, that was carried through more by our main characters, like Loki and Thor, where, like, I thought that their journey was really important and their relationship was really impactful in this movie. And I feel that those, both Chris and Tom, brought their character's journey with them in a way that was very referential to the other movies. And I think whenever they were interacting or whenever they were on screen, I really felt it. Like, I really felt sort of where they had started from. And we'll talk a little bit more about this later, but their scene with Odin when he dies, and then their scene in the elevator at the end when they're kind of talking about where their relationship has got to. I think those are the points where I did really feel the presence of the other movies, and like kind of built on them in a way that I had so longed for. I think when we've talked about Thor movies previously, I've always talked about that relationship. I want more, and I felt like that was achieved in this with pulling from the previous stuff. I think you're probably right in the sense that there were some things like the Warriors 3 where there probably could have been a bit more respect played to what those actors did give to those roles. Like, I'm sure that they cared very much about what they did. At the same time, I can't lie that even in the first viewing, I felt like a little bit of relief when they died. I was just like, oh, God, like, just get them, like, out of here. They were, I think, actually, the disrespect was probably done to them in the previous films. Hmm. If indeed they were deserving of any respect at all, I don't know. But I was just, my expectations for Thor were so low at this point. And I was like, I'm here for Tom Hiddleston, I'm here for Chris Hemsworth. That's pretty much it. And I will watch those two in whatever they do.
So do you think being different to the other the other Thor films actually paid off for this movie, though?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
I mean, there's some big themes that were in the first two, such as Jane Foster, who is just completely absent in this movie.
Yeah, that was
I guess
a bit,
it's
yeah.
one line, one line. So she dumped me. I dumped her. Mm.
Yeah. Are you happy about that?
I'm happy that she's not around. I mean, it's not that I wanted every character and every storyline dragging up from, you know, 5 years ago. It's just, I don't know, I just felt a very heavy ego across the whole film. And it just, I don't know, I feel quite protective of the MCU. And whilst it stumbles and it's not great stuff, it did feel a bit, it just didn't feel like the respect was there for where it fits in the whole timeline. If you look at what comes before it and after it, so Guardians 2 and Black Panther, like, to say Black Panther is a completely new film with a completely new cast, it could have gone anywhere and done anything. It still slots in really well to the cinematic universe, whereas this, I think, sticks out like a bit of a sore thumb for good and for bad reasons.
Yeah. Wow. You know, I'd never really thought about it that way with, like, looking at... I'd always appreciated that the director clearly had his own mark on this movie, but I'd never looked at it really from the disrespect sort of angle, or at least the mocking of previous movies. I quite liked it in terms of the play scene and everything. I thought it was kind of funny because we've clearly had a decision be made by Marvel to say we want kind of rid of the old Thor, and we've decided what we want Thor now to be.
Yeah,
it was like this old long-haired, oh, I'm Thor Odinson, worked, but it was getting tired really quick. So I think they've really freshened it up by giving him a few pop culture references that he knows. He's like, I've been to Earth, I know these pop culture references, I can laugh at these. And actually just evolve his character in a way that'll push him into the next phase of Marvel movies, I think.
I totally agree with that. And I think, I haven't actually seen many interviews with Taika Waititi about this film, so I might feel differently if I had seen him speaking in his own words about how he felt this fit in. But I have seen an interview with Thor, sort of following this, Thor, Chris Hemsworth, following this film, where he has since admitted that he was very unhappy with playing Thor. He had reached a point where he wasn't really interested in this character anymore, was really, not in the sense that he was, like, done with the MCU, but he was starting to feel very stifled about what came next for his character.
Oh, wow.
And that was a conversation he had with Taika, and Taika was, great, I'm going to change everything. And Thor was, and Chris was like, I'm here for that.
It's definitely a reset button, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you see that in later films as well. They're like, the change
they
kind of take.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think it was totally the right, like, you can almost tell that he's having more fun in the role.
Yeah.
Compared to, like, The Dark World or even in Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
Where when we think about it, he was pretty absent in Age of Ultron, looking back.
Yeah, he really was.
The only memorable scene was
half naked in a pool.
Oh, wow. Okay. I was going to say...
You didn't hesitate one bit.
I was going to say his face when Cap nearly pulls up the hammer. But,
yeah, that's that too.
You know, two memorable scenes and they're not even part of the plot. You know what I mean? So, poor Chris Hemsworth. But on the same side, I really like this evolution of his character. Mm. You know, we have seen Infinity War now. We're not going to talk too much about it, but I like him in that movie as well. Yeah. And
I was excited to see him after this movie.
Yeah, I was excited to see
how this new Thor was going to interact with his Avengers.
I think one of my biggest fears going into this movie, though, was after the abomination that was Guardians of the Galaxy 2, I had panic that it was like, they've just applied the Guardians formula to
it. Yeah, with a strong... The thing that in the trailer that set me off was the having such a theme song to it.
So it was Led Zeppelin.
Yeah,
Immigrant Song.
Yeah.
Oh, so sorry.
Is that our pizza?
I think so.
Yeah! Pizza break!
Hello.
Okay, we're back from our pizza break.
I'm full.
I've eaten half the pizza. I'm going to save a little half for afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But talking about saving yourself, we were about to get on to talking about the trailer,
mm-hmm.
right? And Martin, you said before we started recording that possibly watching the trailer may have ruined this movie for you?
I mean, ruin is exaggerating.
Oh, wow.
The movie gave a lot of the film away.
The trailer gave a lot.
Yeah, to do that, but backwards. And you know, thinking about, because we're coming up to Infinity War was kind of surrounded in secrecy. Yeah. Like, a lot of the actors didn't know the whole plot and all that kind of stuff. I would have absolutely loved if I didn't know the Hulk was in this film.
All right.
That whole build-up, that whole suspenseful moment where he comes smashing through the kind of blockade prison thing where he comes out to fight Thor, I thought that moment would have been so incredible if I'd not known he was in the film.
Yeah.
Agreed. And when Hela breaks the hammer as well, that happens in the trailer.
Like the big moments in this film you knew were coming, and it was a shame. And because of that reason, I avoided quite a lot of spoilers for Black Panther, because I didn't want that spoiling for me. It laid it all out on the table.
Yeah.
It really did. I don't know if it was because, because maybe Thor morale after the Dark World was a bit low, that they were like, look at all this cool stuff. We're promised, if you like the Hulk, you know, if you like Mark Ruffalo, we've got him in this, you know, the hammer's going to break, you know. I wonder if maybe they were trying so hard to be like, come on.
It must be so hard for them to sell these movies as well without those really cool
you
bits
just,
in it.
No, come on. The Marvel Cinematic Universe, the most successful movie franchise of all time, is hard to sell.
No, but you can guarantee that, like, I was in that cinema at midnight. That's fine. And then I was there again a few days later. And we would be. But there'd be a lot of people who are like, did I see a Captain America film? Or I think I saw an Avengers film. I'll wait till the DVD.
Yeah.
But, you know,
see it in the cinema. Because
do a staggered strategy. So do, like, you know, up until the release date. Because they've released different trailers with more footage in for every film. So do it, you know, without having the Hulk in up until the release date, and then the following week do it with the Hulk in.
I agree with that. I mean, I think, so Tom, my husband, very rarely comes to Marvel movies with me. Like, it's not really his thing. But after seeing the Ragnarok trailer, that was when he was willing to go to, because he felt like, this is going to be so different from what we've had previously. However, I think they probably could have still made that impact with the Immigrant Song in the trailer, the sort of colors, even to seeing Thor with his hair cut off and those like lines down his face. I think that probably would have been enough of a step change. I think for me, it was the hammer shattering that I was like, that, why did you show that? Like, that was so weird. Mm.
I've got friends as well who I think they've seen Guardians and Guardians 2 in the cinema, and then they've seen Thor, and that's it. And they haven't really seen any other Marvel movies, but just kind of are in it for the good sort of comedy and action movie.
Mm.
And I think definitely those trailers will totally appeal to the casual fans. They maybe could have taken a more Deadpool approach, where they maybe teased like three or four different... So, you know, each trailer was a different person that he was facing.
Yeah.
And teased like loads of different pop culture characters, because... Yeah. I guess with the lighter tone of this movie, they could have got away with that as well. Yeah. You know what I mean? It could have been Tony the Tiger that popped out. They could have been like, oh, wow, it's going to be someone big. Mm. But even then, I think it still might not have had the same. Mm. It's all about that box office.
Yeah, I wonder if though if it has changed, because like the, I mean, I know Infinity War probably always was, they were going to try to keep like the big reveals on the on the down low. But I wonder if like maybe going forward, because I think they did get a lot of criticism. I kind of remember hearing things about people being like, why did you give it all up in the trailer? And again, like you were saying with Black Panther, with Infinity War, I think, I don't know, maybe it's changed a little bit or will change a little bit going forward. I don't feel like Ant-Man and the Wasp has really given all that much away.
Oh, no. Mm. I will say that I was hyped when the first Thor Ragnarok trailer came out, even though it clearly gave a lot away. I was like, yeah, all right, I'm in. Let's do this.
I don't know, maybe you could have just done it in a different way. So, yeah, you know, like in Infinity War, which I'm not going to talk about too much, but there's a moment where Thor just describes all the terrible things that have happened to him in the last 2 weeks. Like, if you'd have had Thor just narrate that to camera, just be like, yeah, I lost my hammer. Like, my half-sister came and ruined everything.
Yeah.
I had to fight one of my best friends. You know, like, that could have been a treatment for the... I don't know. I'm not in charge, clearly.
No, but I do agree. And I think when I was watching this in the cinema, I went in with that worry of, is it going to have had the Guardians treatment, and has everything already been spoiled for me?
I think that, yeah, that's totally what saved it, in that, like, maybe things were spoiled, but so often you see movies where the trailer is so much better than the film.
Yeah.
And I don't think that happened here.
No.
Justice League.
Oh, God.
Oof, still not seen
don't
it.
Don't do
it. But I think with this, I remember feeling in the cinema that it was about 20, 30 minutes in and the hammer had broken and Hulk had already come out. Mm. And I was like, oh, I've seen everything from the trailer.
Yeah, that's
so
fair.
All of this is new. What's about to happen is all new. But I've kind of had my spoilers and big excitable moments ruined for me.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a balance, but I'm with you, Martin.
Thanks.
You're preaching up the right tree.
I'm doing pretty well this pod. Not being crushed.
But since we mentioned her in the trailer and you made a face earlier, I'm guessing you're not much of a fan of Hela then.
Oh, what a leading question.
she was fun.
Yeah.
It just, I expect more from villains in the MCU at this point, I think. She's just like, my name is Hela. I am the goddess of death.
I'm here.
Yeah, I'm speaking with an English accent. She was quite camp. She was all right, but I didn't ever get a sense of dread. And I think sometimes that lacks. I mean, I've mentioned it quite a few times that I need to feel there's something at stake.
Mm.
And with her, like, yeah, she was pretty brutal. She killed everyone.
Yeah. Even at the very end when she'd taken out Thor's eye and things, like, the Asgardians were, like, getting the heck out of Dodge.
Not to jump topic for a second. But I was watching this on my MacBook with the brightness way up. And at the end, you can totally see Thor's eye through his makeup.
And
I need to fix that.
No.
Oh, yeah. I was like, he's got two eyes again. No, it's just the brightness was so high.
Oh,
but yeah, carry on.
No, no. Just like I knew she was going to get defeated.
Yeah.
Well,
I imagine that's, yeah. I imagine that's sort of the tricky thing at this stage when, like, Infinity Wars was like just around the corner, so Thor had to live. I don't know. I kind of liked her. I thought I could tell that she was having a lot of fun, just sort of being a bit ridiculous. She was so camp. Like, I love when she's walking through the Hall of Treasures, and she's just like swanning around, like, talking about things. Pushes over the gauntlet, being like, "Fake," you know, fixing that plot hole.
But the fact that she has like her emo hair, she looks like a MySpace photograph from 2006.
Can we talk about like when Loki and Hela are standing next to each other, Thor looks like the adopted one.
Yeah, that's strange.
You know, we've talked a lot about guys and their looks on this podcast, but mama.
A bit of Cate Blanchett.
Oh, a bit of Cate Blanchett. What a great look. She's rocking it.
With or without the spikes.
Let's do it. If we're going there.
But like, that was another thing as well. It was like every time she'd get cross, she'd like change a wig and it'd be like a spiky thing again. And
like
and they just made it into such this big drama, and sometimes they do it via silhouette. And like, yeah. I was like, but her hair didn't like add anything to her powers. It was just like, because all of her knives came from her arms.
Yeah.
It was like, let's do this. Yeah. Hair out.
She's like...
I love that when she
bring
does...
Bring it to the runway.
When she does her first speech and then, like, one of the guards is like, whoever you are. And she's like, did you not just listen to what I just said? And she's like, fine. And, like, I really like.
I don't know.
I think they could have just leaned into it more.
Yeah.
About how she was just really tired of everyone's crap.
Yeah.
And just so overpowered that it didn't make any sense. And I thought because she was so overpowered, the ending made no sense.
When Cerberus destroys the Asgard.
Yeah. I just thought that they didn't like come up with a clever way of getting rid of her.
Well, so at the beginning, when Odin is warning them about her, they say that she, like you and Loki, get their power from Asgard. So I think the idea was Asgard's destroyed, then she doesn't have any power anymore. Although that would imply that Thor wouldn't either, but maybe we shouldn't pull it that way.
Asgard is a people.
Well, yeah, so maybe that's it. Maybe like Thor draws the power from his people, but she was dependent on Asgard as a place to get her powers from. So Cerberus destroying everything meant like she just wouldn't have any powers anymore. That's how I interpreted it anyway.
It did feel like it's an MCU film, so we have to have a villain.
Yeah.
But if I could pick, I would not have a villain. Do you know what I mean? Like, it felt like she was she was like a side plot rather than the main plot, and the main plot was about Thor and Loki.
Yeah, definitely. So, do you think the Grandmaster is like a better villain?
I don't know. It just felt like the writers felt like there had to be a villain, and didn't know what to do with her at the end.
If you were Hela,
she's a vehicle, isn't she?
If you were Hela, what would you have done differently? If you'd rocked up out of centuries of being...
This is a management strategy.
Disappeared. Well, I mean, if you're thinking, put yourself in Hela's onesie. what would you be doing differently to take over Asgard?
I would have less chat. I'd have less chat and I'd have less sidekicks. Because she's like, oh, you're my protege now and you need to behead the poor peasant lady. And I'd have just been in there and just like, smack down, kill everyone... Paint everything black, light a lot of fires, and just be like, me and my big dog and the zombie army. Like, I would have taken names rather than this, whoa, if you want to follow the path of greatness, come with me, other English actor. Like, no.
Yeah.
She needed to be scary. Like, I wasn't scared of her.
No, I wasn't scared. And I think the difficulty is the way that the I'm perfectly fine with the fact that they did wipe out the Warriors 3 and all that sort of stuff. But just the way they wiped them out, it could have been so much more menacing. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And that would have given Hela
so much
more power.
And she'd like tortured them.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah.
No, I think you're probably right about that. I mean, but you're also right in that she was sort of a side plot. Like, she was the necessary thing to get Loki and Thor out of Asgard onto the trash planet, and then to have the big battle at the end.
This movie's great.
But tell me why you liked her.
Oh, I mean...
Because I feel like I'm being a Debbie Downer a lot of this film, but I did really like this film. I just feel like I'm...
I think my main thing is that I didn't dislike her. When she was on screen, which can so often happen for our other villains that we've talked about, I didn't mind watching her. Like, I kind of enjoyed what she was doing with the role, her, like we said, her campy attitude, I just thought she was like a fun, potentially unnecessary but enjoyable, like, addition. And I think for what needed to be accomplished, getting them off Asgard, destroying Asgard at the end to kind of push them out, I think it worked fine. And And I always have lots of time for Kate Blanchett, to be honest.
She's so overpowered, but that's not really well portrayed. I really like the kind of mythos element that they've put in there about Asgard and how she was, you know, kind of Odin's OG henchman.
Yeah. Literally papering over the cracks.
Yeah
like, that was interesting.
I really liked that. And I'd have actually liked that explored more. Mm. More flashbacks would have been great. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I
get
love...
her and Anthony Hopkins... tearing apart some innocent planets.
I love the throwback or the flashback scene of the Valkyries attacking her. That was really cool.
Yeah.
And I think that's when I got the most sense of her powers and ability. I thought that whole scene was played really well because it's sort of the only time they did that kind of scene in the super slow-mo, the real intensity. And it really felt like being...
And really kind of surreal as well.
Yeah. It really felt like being in her nightmare when, like, Loki goes into her mind and she, like, you can see, like, this is where her horror and fear would come from and why she'd drink to forget it. I freaking love Valkyrie. She's so cool.
Yeah. I hope she gets an actual name, because the Valkyrie were, like, a group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I hope...
Scrapper
I hope
142 or
something. Yeah. I hope she gets an actual name
in the
next
one. What do you think
her
real
name
is?
Oh, Carol. Carol.
Gaza.
No.
Thor, Loki, Hela.
No, nah, it's going to be something like ancient and cool. I thought she was great, though. I really liked the kind of scrappy energy she brought to it. And like, it was the real quick kind of, like, throwaway interactions that she had. Like, the one moment where I was like, oh, I flipping love you, is when, Bruce is now Bruce again, and she's finally kind of on board. She's brought them Loki in chains, and Bruce are just kind of keep going. Things like, oh, I think I know you. It's weird, right? And she's like, I need drinks, you know. And I, like, she reminds me so much of my friend Rachel Kempsel, who won't be listening to this, so I feel okay to, but like, she's so much just like Bantz, kind of formidable, kind of scrappy. Yeah, I love her interaction with everyone. Really, it was really good.
She was a lot of fun. I liked her. I liked the bit where she kind of, like, right at the start when you first met her, and she controlled her ship.
Yeah.
And just annihilated everyone.
Yeah.
Because she wanted Thor, a surprise. And that she could drag Thor as well was really
cool. That was
cool.
Yeah.
The moment she came off the plane in, like, full Valkyrie blue
sash. Oh, so that cool moment, that suit up moment.
With the fireworks in the back of
one of the best suit up moments in the MCU, I think.
And, you know, the bit where she's jumping out of the plane to just take some planes down with a sword. Yeah. Like,
that was, you know, that was really, that bit at the end where Thor was like, I guess I'm going to join too. And he jumps in and they're both like just tearing ships apart and flying between them. I was like, that is insanely cool.
And that's the most like godlike character we've seen in a while. Because the Warriors 3, they were just like carrying the bags. And like Loki
eating
doesn't really...
chicken bones.
Yeah. And you know, having mead. But Loki doesn't really move like that. Odin did a little bit in the first film, but she's the only one where, you know, super fast, can jump really far, can just like take names across the board.
Yeah.
She was good.
I really like
her. And we got Thor's little speech about how having like a female guard.
Oh, that was
like
so funny.
Totally something that he should be doing, and how progressive it was.
Yeah. I wish the one thing I wish though was I love the bit where he was like, I wanted to be a Valkyrie when I grew up. and I wish he just hadn't said and then I found out they were all women. I mean, I know that leads into the progressive thing, but I wish you just sort of like left it, been like, oh, I wish I always wanted to be a Valkyrie. You know?
Yeah.
Or just made some comment about like, that's why my hair's so long.
Yeah.
That'd be quite fun.
Yeah.
Just rewriting the script there for all those script fans. Do we need to talk about Valkyrie's orientation?
Yeah. So I think we've talked a little bit about sort of representation in the MCU and how, like, some of the places where we thought it was missing a bit. And while it never is sort of explicitly said in this movie, I feel like it was implied. That might be reading too much into sort of a kind of warrior's relations, but I got the sense that in that flashbook, the woman who sacrificed herself to save Valkyrie, I kind of got a sense that there was a deeper connection there than them just being comrades. It might just have been them being best friends, reading too much into that, but I felt like there was something there. And also just kind of like her interactions with, I mean, I like that there was, at least from my watching of it, there seemed to be absolutely no indication of sexual chemistry between her and Thor, at least from her side, which I liked
as
well.
There's a slight moment where they both jump back into the plane together
and they have a look.
Which, you know, if we want to put labels on it, may mean she's bisexual. But like that flashback with the other Valkyrie sacrificing herself is like the closest we've ever got to someone on the spectrum. Like,
it's a shame it has to be so subtle.
I always think it is a little bit easier to play out female same-sex relationships in mainly straight films, but I'm not sure if you didn't read it as a queer relationship, I think you would have been underwhelmed with the explanation of why she is why she is.
Okay.
So if you know she's turned to drink, she's alienated herself, she's turned her back on her profession or her warriorism. If you didn't read her rationale as kind of a love story, I think that would have felt quite like a weird, like, oh, you lost one of your comrades.
Yeah.
Like, it's not... I don't think that's justification enough for how badly she went off the rails.
Mm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. I like that, though. Because I think also with... because she does sort of occupy what traditionally, maybe in previous films, would have been more of a male sphere, her, the way she like scraps and like her, well, the drinking and just her like, I don't give a damn kind of attitude. I think that kind of plays into sort of the stereotypes of that type of persona anyway. But I do wish it could have been something very implicit. Like, why not? Like, why?
Yeah.
Why does it have to be so subtle?
Yeah. And, you know, that some of that stuff might be on the cutting room floor.
Could be.
Might be a nice moment of one of them holding the other one's face or something. I'm expecting them to snog.
So how do you feel? I mean, there's been a little bit, and I mean, it's not a lot of controversy. It's a kind of spattering of controversy this week about Donald Glover's character in Solo and how the director's apparently come out and kind of retrofitted to the movie that his character is pansexual. But a lot of people have kind of responded to that by saying, just say it in the movie. Don't retrofit that.
I'm looking at you, J.K. Rowling and Dumbledore. Come on.
So how do you think that that's kind of applying to this movie, or do you think that we've just not got enough of that story yet?
So I think it's so easy to kind of... it's not easy, but I think quite often people kind of... characters can sometimes end up entering that pantheon just because people want to think they're being represented in some way. For me, it kind of comes back to like, just say it. Don't be subtle. Make it an implicit thing. We should have these characters, you know, inhabiting all the various spheres that now exist in, you know, that exist in our current society. So I don't have a problem necessarily with people kind of taking that on and saying like, oh no, this is what you can interpret this as. But mostly I just think, yeah, just say it. Just have it be clear.
And literally nothing else in this film is subtle.
Like, that is also true.
Everything is turned up to 120%. Like, everyone's multicoloured.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a plane that shoots out fireworks to signify that it's...
The orgy plane.
Orgy plane. Like, there isn't any subtlety. You've got Kate Blanchett changing her hair on a whim.
Yeah.
We've got a giant dog. Like, a character can be gay. It's fine.
Yeah. And I think if you're trying to bring in people who are not necessarily as open-minded to that, this movie was already showing you enough new things as that sort of viewer anyway to just let's bundle that in and bring everyone into the 21st century with us, right? It you spot on, I'd never even thought about it like that it was just a subtlety in a movie full of absolute extroversion about everything.
Yeah.
And not to jarringly change subject, but probably the biggest extrovert in the movie. True. The Grand Master.
Oh. Barton also made a face.
Like the MCU, I promise.
I believe you. So we talked maybe 3 or 4 podcasts in a row now about popular, well-known actors showing up, playing a role, and kind of being like, oh, that's Sylvester Stallone, or that's David Hasselhoff, or, you know.
You just name people from Guardians 2.
Yeah, okay. Bad.
Martin Freeman.
Oh, that's Martin Freeman. I guess Marvel can't necessarily get away from it anymore. Yeah. You know, there's so many characters that they have to hire actors of some level.
But you'd think, like, when they're spending that much money, like, especially on something like Age of Ultron or Infinity War, like, The bill for actors is quite high already. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's going to cost them a lot of money. Put an unknown in there. It's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love Jeff Goldblum in this role. I really do.
Round of applause from this side of the table.
I mean, I'm a big fan of his anyway. But I think, like, that character is just so... I mean, yes, it is Jeff Goldblum. But the fact that he was allowed to just do his own thing. There's so many moments, like, oh God, like, right at the beginning when he's talking about, like, how time works on Sakaar, and he just sort of stops speaking and, like, makes a face, and, like, Loki and Thor look at each other, or all of his interactions with his, like, right-hand woman, who I flipping loved her as well when they're talking about, like, slaves. Don't call them slaves.
Her name's Topaz.
Yeah, she...
Is it? Something like that?
Oh, her character. I don't know. She was in Taika Waititi's Hunt for the Wilder People, and she was astonishing in that as well. But all of their interactions, I don't know. He made me smile every single time he was on screen. And I like that the other actors always seemed to be more on their toes when they were in a scene with him, I think is just something Jeff Goldblum does, especially when he's playing
him,
a comedic character.
And I nearly called him the Collector, but that's his brother.
Mm. Yeah.
I've not really read more into that than the BuzzFeed headline. Did you know that these two obscure MCU characters were brothers? But the Grandmaster and Loki, their scenes together, every time I was smiling, he's like, "Where are you going?" And he shows him back to the seat. And he keeps doing this whole brothers or, you know, whatever confused relationship you are. And I think the fear that everyone has of him,
and even Loki was a bit scared of him.
Totally, he was totally scared.
The way because he's just nonchalantly melting people. He's so good. He was a terrifying character and an absolute maniac.
Yeah,
but so enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, someone whose powers are predicated on his whim. I think like those characters are always really interesting. You see it sort of, you know, like in Game of Thrones, you had Joffrey and his, you know, he's terrifying mostly because you don't know what he's going to do at any given time. And I think Jeff Goldblum sort of exuded that brilliantly. Like, really, I really enjoyed him in this film. I laughed so many times.
I liked it. I think I prefer The Collector, and I think that's because when we first see The Collector, it's so unusual, and the film's, you know, because he's on nowhere and it's dark and it's scary, and then you have this collector and it's weird and he's out of place. Jeff Goldblum felt really he should have been there.
Yeah,
I would have liked it if there was something to juxtapose him against. Mm. Whereas Thor was being quite Bantz, Loki's being quite Bantz. Like, I don't know. I think if he wasn't in this film, I'd have liked him more.
Mm. Okay, I hope we see more of him. I hope he's in more movies. I just, even if it's just a cat, I don't think it's ever going to be as big a role as it was in Thor.
I'd like to see him and the Collector in a scene together, just like counting their losses.
That would be really funny. The brothers together.
Like bickering over like a brooch or something, because that's the only thing they've got left.
I could totally see him in the next Guardians movie, right? As a bad guy or just some sort of antagonist.
Yeah.
But, you know, other than that, there wasn't really many other things to antagonize Thor and Loki in this movie other than, let me segue nicely again, their own relationship.
I think Anna's got some thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, my Loki love has always been, you know, top level. But this, I mean, sort of like what we were saying earlier about how I think that their relationship as a kind of a touchstone throughout these films, not just the Thor films, but you had it in Avengers as well. And I thought this movie was just such a good kind of culmination. I mean, Loki's entrance into this film, I think, might be my absolute favorite. I mean, not only because clearly Anthony Hopkins was having an absolute ball, like playing Loki, playing him.
I hadn't thought about that. It was actually Anthony Hopkins, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, the best line ever is when like Thor shows up and Anthony Hopkins goes, "Oh shit!" Like, you know, it was so funny.
Oh, I did laugh at that when I watched this movie.
So good, but then just. And I think even this film, it sort of starts out with Loki doing the usual Loki, like up to tricks, like trying to get what he can get. And then sort of through the progression of this film, there are a couple of really profound beats, like when Odin dies, there's that whole scene, I think, is played so well between the three of them. Odin, you know, calls them my sons, and there's a very clear like look on Loki's face. So he talks about loving them. Like, Loki has a very profound reaction to that as well. And sort of that kind of comes back a few times throughout, like when there's that the elevator discussion before the Forever Brilliant Get Help scene, where they talk about like, we should part ways forever. Like, Thor says, this planet is perfect for you. You would do well here. But he also talks about how, you know, I thought we were going to fight together forever, and you messed it up. But I think for the first time, I really did get a sense of like Loki's regret for what could have been. Like, his motivations have changed so much. In the first film, he was so desperate for Odin's love. And then sort of the repercussions of that. And then now he's sort of come back to a place where he's figuring out what he wants to have come next. And I so enjoyed every moment he was on screen as well. Absolutely cracked me up. Loved it.
By far and away, one of the most complicated characters in the MCU.
Yeah.
I don't think he's recognized for that.
No.
I would like to give him a little award that could sit on his desk.
Yeah, he would deserve it. Definitely. And I love how, like, he and Chris Hemsworth clearly just enjoy each other's like stage presence, movie presence so much, and the way they play off each other, and the jokes are so funny. I mean, even down to when there's that throwaway line about Jane dumping him, Loki looks at Thor, and there's a moment where he seems like genuinely like, oh, sad.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Thor makes fun of him for dressing like a witch.
I do like Loki's all black suit. That's pretty cool.
I love too when he drops through the portal when Strange pulls away and like Thor like pokes at that piece of paper like as if that's Loki.
Yeah, I was just about to say, who wore the best suit in the MCU? Loki in that little black number is
if
probably.
If you used to say Tony Stark, I'm leaving.
Absolutely not.
Well, we will be talking more about Tony Stark in a couple of weeks' time, and then definitely talking a lot more about his suits in our final wrap-up episode. But we have got still movies to watch before then.
Yeah.
Right? Before we do. A little stay or go thing.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to talk about? Thor Ragnarok.
I didn't like the electrocution gag. I thought once, fine, twice, all right, but it kept happening.
Oh, what with the piece on the
just
neck.
Everyone
the
was
neck
just getting electrocuted.
There was a lot of electrocution in this movie.
I was like, no, and I didn't really like Tyo. I can't do it.
What, you didn't like Korg?
Korg.
Oh,
not for me.
MG.
It's like, hi there. I'm just gonna put some more of me in the film because I'm an overbearing director, and it's all about me.
No, I don't think that's what was happening at all. Oh, I love Korg. I think he's a really good juxtaposition of like might and power. He's made out of rock and he's supposed to be formidable, and yet he was this really like nice, calm guy.
I hope he dies in Infinity War.
Martin!
I hope he's a dry stone wall.
Oh.
Get out.
Oh my God.
You know, I tell you what, we've spoken about it already on the podcast.
Yep.
But I'm going to go first this week.
Okay.
All right. I went into this movie in the cinema with the fear that this had Guardian syndrome, that it had been given that treatment.
Yeah.
And what we talked about many times about how these movies can't let a serious moment happen without a gag.
Mm.
I remember leaving this movie with some friends. They were like, that was crap, was that? That was like, felt like Guardians. It, you know, there wasn't a serious moment. There was loads of gags and goofs and gaffes. And it wasn't, you know, really didn't go anywhere. They just tried to throw everything at the wall. I remember really liking it and being like, I think you're wrong, but I do see where you're coming from.
Mm.
After this whole rewatch that we've been going through and kind of thinking a little bit deeper about why Guardians didn't work and why it felt a little bit tired, actually, I made way more excuses for this movie the second time, and I think it's shot up maybe two or three places in my all MCU ranking.
Nice.
Because it just feels fresh for Thor.
Mm.
It feels like a new direction for a character that was, when you look back, a bit stale. It introduced a few new characters which I hope stick around for ages. Korg, maybe, you know, it was funny for this film. I'm not too bothered if he does or doesn't come back, but I'd really love to see Valkyrie again. I'd really love to see the Collector again. Not the Collector, I did it again.
Grandmaster.
The Grandmaster. I'd really like to see the Grandmaster again. I'd like to see more of the Trash Planet, even though we probably won't.
No.
It's a planet that I'd love to go back to.
Mm.
And all of those things combined, considering the decent story, this movie is a big, fat stay. Absolutely. Reverse order. Martin.
Wow, it can stay for me. Yeah, I know, like, I was negative. I usually have quite a lot of questions about films anyway. Yeah, I did really like it. It had its heart was in the right place. If it did veer off in directions I wasn't particularly happy with all of the time, it's satisfied me. If only for the moment where Thor comes back onto the Rainbow Bridge, missing an eye and being Massive Lightning Man. Like, that, yeah. That payoff for me was worth the rest of the film.
Oh, yeah. Anna?
Oh, well, I don't know. Yes, it stays for me. if for the main reason of that central relationship of Loki and Thor, their journey, and I felt like this was a really good culmination of a trilogy, and I was really impressed with what they were able to do with for it. So, yeah, stays.
I'll tell you what, you know what we've forgotten to talk about? The Hulk?
Oh, no.
Much like the intro, Bruce Banner misses out.
Yeah. He was great. Let's leave it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the scene where he had to walk through his own carnival.
That was really so funny. Fun.
Paper mache Hulk heads.
Oh yeah, there were so many layers to that planet.
Yeah,
that were just great. There was people on the ground that were having these sort of festival things. Yeah. And there was the weird scrapyards, and then also the blood sports. It was very rich and complex.
Yeah.
I was glad he was there. I felt like he added a lot. Mostly it was for gags again. I think. Probably could have been lifted out of the movie with not that much really being affected by
whole,
it, but I
like,
loved
the
him
sun's
in it.
Setting stuff that Thor was trying
and Thor's
to do.
Big goofy grin.
Oh wow! At the time, like my partner was watching it with me, and she was howling at the screen because she was like, "As if Thor's trying to do the Black Widow thing! What a stupid idiot!"
I did get quite creeped out at Hulk in the bath. Hulk like
oh,
Hulk
when there's like the
like,
the Hulk like when Thor's like oh
butt.
That's in my mind now like
that was, I didn't need
that was a
you can see his butt
I didn't need Hulk
I don't
butt.
Think that was the part of him that
no,
Thor was
no,
referring
but when he walks to the window then
yeah,
he's
yeah.
like Gwynjet
yeah
you can see he's got really peachy I don't know it's not peachy it's green
anyway on that
it's
note
like an apple it's like a Granny Smith okay let's end it there. That is all for today's A Marvelous Lunch Break. If you're watching along, next week we will be talking about the first ever excursion to Wakanda in Black Panther.
Now,
admission to the listeners, you may have noticed that the quality of this podcast, in terms of audio, has significantly improved. In terms of chat and conversation, the jury is still out on that one, right? But we went to see Black Panther when it came out back in March.
God, yeah.
And we got straight back here. We set recording. We talked about the movie and we gave our like immediate feelings about Black Panther for that one. So there may be a dip in audio quality next week.
There will be a dip in audio quality next week.
There may be. We don't want to detract everyone completely.
True.
Please bear with us through that, but we really hope that you like it. I remember recording that episode, even though it was a few months ago now, and I love talking about that movie.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch it again over the next couple of weeks. Wakanda, Black Panther, some of my favorite additions to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Mm-hmm.
So please come back next week. You can find this podcast that you're already listening to and that podcast on Apple Podcasts. You can find it on Spotify. Martin, where else can listeners find us?
Audio Boom, SoundCloud, Stitcher, something else.
All of them.
Yeah.
We'll be on the radio.
Put it in the Google.
Tune into Medium Wave. Pop some numbers in there. I don't know. You may hear this. You might not. Other than that, if people want more of you between now and then, Anna, where can listeners find you?
They can get me on Instagram, Anna Marvelous, 2 N's, 2 L.
And you can find me at DVM Preston across Twitter and Instagram. Well, that's all it for this week. So please join us next time. Thank you very much and goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Post-credits, how do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, the first one pretty solidly sets the scene for Infinity War, the last we see of the Asgardians. Thanos' ship is descending on them.
And they're in space.
And they're in space.
They're in space.
That's scary. I feel nervous.
So nervous.
So
nervous.
Heart palpitations.
And the other post-credits?
Oh, you just get a bit more Jeff Goldblum, don't you?
Yeah. Yep.
I'll take
credit.
What I can get.
Yeah.
At this point. With the Jurassic World trailers, I'll take what I can get, right? Cool. Anything else on those?
That's all.
Quickest ever. Thank you very much for listening, everyone.
I'm finished.
Okay. Thank you very much if you sat through that. And have a wonderful week. We'll speak to you again next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.